At the unaccustomed sound, the little creature turned, startled, and found itself staring into the twin barrels of a Colt Energy Rapid Fire.
No tricks, or you'll be missing your head.
The Verkin obviously had no idea what the man with the weird eyes was saying, but guns impart a universal message. Obey or be shot. The Verkin's eyes widened in apprehension.
Shut it.
The gun barrel rammed painfully against its mouth, and the Verkin fell silent again. It had been working underground, constructing laboratory facilities, playing its small part in the Alpha's grand new vision of the planet Orion, when it had to answer a call of nature. So it clambered up the stone ladder and emerged amidst the ruins of a shattered city, to confront four figures, three of them bearing guns. Angel Eyes jerked his weapon to indicate that the Verkin should start moving.
Now, my little friend, let's find some place quiet where you can tell us everything we need to know.
The Bounty Hunter's needle ship had entered the B-2323 system hours before. Never one to take an unnecessary risk, Angel Eyes had insisted on a full system analysis, using the craft's scanning electron telescope. The views of Verk itself told them nothing. A huge black rock spinning in space, with no surface buildings or installations of any kind. Angel Eye's suspicions were immediately aroused. The scope was retrained on Orion, where it picked out the unbelievable destruction that had been visited on that luckless world. They could see what looked like several work squads, swarms of small creatures bustling about. Most of them were entering tunnels in the ground, though some remained on the surface, sifting through the debris of a civilization. But in search of what? There was only one way to find out. Ask one of them. So they landed the ship in a deserted area of flattened buildings and set out to catch themselves a source of information. They say that everything comes to they who wait, and they didn't have to wait for long.
Don't recognize the language. How we gonna know what he's saying?
Angel Eyes nodded toward their dark companion.
He'll tell the Arcturan. They always tell the Arcturan.
The hooded, dark-robed magician leaned toward it. Then the Arcturan's hands closed on the sides of the creature's head and rested there gently.
Zingnasi, Iore, Ioromore, Selkmke.
Now only the Verkin's frightened eyes and the oily beads of perspiration on its forehead betrayed its fear. Angel Eyes knew what was coming next. He'd seen Kabale do this many times before. The result was always the same. They told what they knew. Tendrils of the Arcturan's sinister mind probed into the Verkin's skull, moving like hungry worms through the pathways of its primitive brain. The creature's eyes rolled back in its head, and its face registered extreme pain, but it made little sound as the Arcturan used his dark arts to tease out what the Verkin knew. Finally satisfied, the alien magician drew back from his probings. A long shudder ran through the Verkin, which remained standing in exactly the same position.
Well, things are more complex than we have thought. The creature is a Verkin. Simple, primitive, a throwback. He knows nothing of Lobo or John Jones, nothing about any million credit reward. But its world has been enslaved by a being that calls itself the Alpha.
So what happened here? These Verkins aren't intelligent enough to invade and destroy an entire planet. And whatever this Alpha is, I don't see it raising these cities on its own.
The Arcturan's eyes were hidden in the shadows of its hood.
Then you would be wrong.
He gestured vaguely, indicating the destruction all around.
The Alpha did this, more or less, alone. Now it has sent the Verkins here to prepare for war.
War? Who would? There are only two planets in the system.
Then we must suppose the Alpha intends to wage its battles outside the system.
You mean attack another solar system?
Yes.
This changes everything.
Deep in thought, the bounty hunter screwed up the golden eyes that had given him his name.
You know, it's illegal under the Galactic Convention for any world to start a war.
Sure, but we ain't galactic cops. We can't stop it.
Who said anything about stopping it? As soon as this Alpha launched his attack on Orion, he became an outlaw. They'll put a price on his head. A high price, if he's into destroying planets.
Randon's ugly face lit up.
I get it. We freeze in, catch him, and claim it.
You got it. And if the Alpha's up for invading more planets, that bounty will soar like a bird.
Bert gestured toward the Verkan, still standing immobile, as if paralyzed by fear.
What about him?
Angel Eyes shrugged.
Yeah, we can't take a chance on him talking. He might be dumb, but this Alpha is anything but.
Minutes later, the needle ship blasted off again, leaving the hapless Verkan's corpse buried beneath a pile of rubble. The giant planet Zarnia was a paradise. The Zarnians had long since eradicated war and aggression and criminal behavior. There was no poverty, no inequality, no dispute that could not be solved in a civilized manner. Creative endeavor of all types was encouraged from infancy. The planet's golden towers housed poets and philosophers, writers and artists, craftsmen and dreamers. Everybody recycled their trash. The streets of its cities bristled with political correctness, not the kind that was adopted by an elite and force-fed to its minions, but a natural, joyous philosophy that people adopted happily and willingly. Life was good, the Zarnians were good, and their philosopher said it was 99% certain that the whole universe was good. And into this Eden, a serpent was born. Into this paradise, a worm. Its name was Lobo. There was no rational explanation for his existence. He had been conceived and born in the same way as billions of Zarnians over the centuries. His parents were typical pillars of society. Those who believed in astrology, and there were many, concluded there were no dark aspects, no sinister relationships between the planets. Those who believed in science were totally dumbfounded. And those who believed in religion started building arcs or headed for the hills. The only possible explanation was a cosmic joke. Lobo was one of those random acts of nature that lie dormant for hundreds of thousands of years, then without warning emerge to overturn everything. A planet of good people produces someone for whom evil is too mild an epithet. A society of angels spawns the great beast. It could only be some demon from hell's idea of having a belly laugh.
Is this true? All truth is relative. Only honesty is absolute. Can we believe him? The bounty hunter has told the story so many times, perhaps even he is no longer sure of it. How different from the Martian?
His mother died in childbirth. Some say the baby deliberately strangled her with its own umbilical cord and ate it afterward. It is on the record that both attending obstetricians never worked in medicine again, and that three nurses claimed substantial financial compensation for the trauma they suffered. And before the child was a month old, his father committed suicide. Lobo was expelled from kindergarten on his first day, after hospitalizing several of his classmates. Modeling clay was never meant to be forcibly ingested, any more than wax crayons should be melted into bodily orifices. He lasted longer at school, perhaps because of the pure hatred he felt for his teacher. A disciplinarian of the old school, she was a real dragon. One of the few people not to be cowed by Lobo's foulness, vulgarity, and all-around violent menace, it was one of the happiest days of his life when, years later, one of his first bounty-hunting jobs was to track down and kill the old lady. He took to wearing a leather jacket and steel-toed boots and began assaulting people in the street. Unlike Plato's utopian republic, Zarnia had no omnipotent elite to manage the lives of the peasantry. They had no peasants either. Zarnia was closer to Aristotle's ideal, that if decent men are but left alone, the whole world will prosper. Unfortunately, this meant that not only did Zarnia not have a police force, it had no concept of a police force. Lobo's crimes went unpunished. Emboldened, he got worse. During his teenage years, Lobo decided to become a star of popular music. His group, the main man and several scumbags, only played one gig. The cacophony they produced caused widespread deafness in the concert hall. Unfortunately for the several scumbags, Lobo had prefigured their deaths by electrocution into the act. They didn't get a return booking. He started drinking alcohol and smoking. Drugs were legal on Zarnia, though it was centuries since almost anybody had bothered to use them. Drugs were a means of escape, and Zarnians had nothing to escape from. Until now, when addiction levels soared in response to Lobo's behavior. By the time Lobo was in his late teens, he'd had enough. He was bored. Bored with this world of perfect goodness. Bored causing mischief. Bored causing trouble. Bored killing innocent people. Bored, bored, bored. He was unique among Zarnians, and he'd had it up to the eyeballs with the other creeps. He was going to be unique, period. He taught himself how to use guns and knives, and created the designs for his first chain and hook. Analysis of the frag grenade and related explosives became one of his favorite hobbies. One of the school subjects at which Lobo had excelled was biotechnology. Bored near to death by lethargy, he retired to his home lab one day and locked himself in until he had completed his self-appointed task. When he emerged, he was holding a flask containing one of the most deadly microorganisms that had ever been created. He didn't pause to consider as he climbed up onto the roof of his old school. He didn't think twice as he held the flask up at eye level, admiring its cloudy, swirling contents in the light of another beautiful Zarnian day. And he didn't suffer a single pang of regret as he let the flask slip from his fingers. He watched as it plunged to the schoolyard below, smashing into 1,000 shards, freeing its dark and deadly bacteria. He'd ingested the antidote himself that morning. It took a week for the planet to die. 7 days of agony for billions of people. Parents and children, friends and lovers, all watched each other fall sick and die. Then fell sick and died themselves. The streets were lined with bloated corpses as the hideous disease swept around the planet like wildfire. And while his people perished, Lobo partied. After all, he had something to celebrate. Now he really was unique. The very last Zarnian.
Is this a genuine record of his brain readings? We do not err. This one is no hero. He has much suppressed fury. He may be insane. His account may therefore be faulty. It will be advantageous to discover if his biotechnological skills are genuine. That would radically shorten our time scale.
Lobo waited till every last person was dead, then stocked up on booze and smokes and headed off-world in a primitive, self-built space pod. He was going to see the galaxy, sample all of its myriad pleasures for himself, bed every babe he could find. And woe betide anybody who tried to stand in his way. There were several abortive attempts at holding down employment, none of which lasted more than a few hours. Lobo detested being told what to do. He needed something that harnessed his creativity. At Galactic Command HQ, there was talk of putting a bounty on his head. But apart from the Zarnian's own boasting, there was no evidence to confirm that he had, in fact, murdered his race. Lobo soon gravitated toward bounty hunting, where he proved himself to be the perfect recruit. Fast, cunning, ruthless, he was these and more. While others tried out one job, then left sickened by the death of their prey or their own bloody injuries, Lobo took to the life like a piranha to flesh. He could kill any villain he wanted. As long as there was a warrant, nobody would ask questions. If he could justify it, he was allowed to torture in the hunt for information on his prey. And bounty hunting gave him a quasi-legal authority, making it harder for anybody to charge him when his killings weren't strictly in the line of duty. The serpent had slithered into the only place it truly fitted, outside the bowels of a high-security prison fortress.
He is much like us. In effect, only. He has no rational purpose. He is psychopathic. An anti-hero. The opposite of the Martian. Even now, the technology embedded in their crystal cells draws off his and the Martian's emotional energy. Lobo's will spread rage and fury. The Martian's will spread dark despair. Emotion as a weapon. We like this.
Dawn was breaking over Virk's highest point when the huge rock being emerged from the cavernous interior. Briefly, it raised its head and scanned the heavens. The penetrating red light of the rising sun played over its quartzine body, conjuring up a whirlpool of swirling, fiery colors. It looked as if its entire being were combusting. It stretched out its arms and started to rise in the air. Then it was gone, the massive body soaring up and away into space like a living rocket. Superman clung to the shadows in a cleft between black shiny boulders. He watched and wondered until the mighty rock creature became no more than a distant speck, then vanished from view altogether. The Man of Steel focused his supervision and followed the departing behemoth's progress. It seemed set on a course for Orion, the world Superman had found in flames.
Could that be the directorate of the Imperium of Verk?
It seemed unlikely. But then again, Verk was an unlikely place to set itself up as an Imperium, and somebody, or something, had caused that widespread destruction on Orion. Apart from anything else, a barren rock like Verk could never have birthed any kind of advanced life, let alone that impressive figure. A few hours earlier, when the meteor swarm passed its closest point to the planetoid, Superman had seized his chance. It was a risk, he knew, but it was one he had to take for his friend's sake. He streaked out from the shelter of the rolling space rock and sped down to the surface below. He was only in sight of any detectors Verk might have had for seconds. It was still dark where he landed, though his keen vision picked out the gargantuan stone entranceway nearby. Normally, his X-ray vision could penetrate almost any solid substance. He'd expected to be able to peer into the very heart of Verk. It hadn't worked out so easily. True, he could vaguely make out a network of underground passageways, and he had blurry impressions of strange-shaped chambers, but all detail eluded him. It could only be due to the presence of lead, the only effective shield for his X-rays, and the planetoid's dense geology. He couldn't tell if the entrance was guarded or not. For all he knew, a dozen sentinels might be waiting for him inside. So he decided to wait for dawn, when normal vision might do what X-rays couldn't. As the red fingers of the rising sun lit up Verk's horizon in a fabulous light show, he'd watched in amazement as the huge humanoid had exited and taken to the skies. The light spread quickly, washing over Superman's bolt hole mere seconds after the giant had left. Superman could see the entrance clearly now, and there appeared to be no sign of any guards. Cautiously, he hovered a few inches off the ground, then streaked to the entrance. It was deserted. He flew inside, awestruck by the weird, indecipherable carvings. Although they could only be religious in nature, there was something very futuristic about them. He couldn't help wondering if they were mere ornamentation or something more profound. Several tunnels led off from the rear of the entrance hall. Superman listened carefully, but could hear nothing. He chose a tunnel at random and set off down it. If it led nowhere, he could always come back to the others. Proceeding as fast as he could while still retaining his caution, he followed the meandering passage to its end. It opened out into a series of small, regular, bulb-shaped chambers.
Strangely reminiscent of machinery.
Superman remembered the technological feel to the carvings. Six or seven small, carved stone pipes connected the chambers and ran out through a channel far too small for Superman to enter. There was no other exit. He retraced his path and chose the adjacent tunnel for his second foray. This one sloped down at less of an angle. It was wider and taller than the other, perhaps specifically to accommodate the stone giant. Deep below him, he was sure he could sense the vibrations of beings at work. The lead in the quartz walls made it impossible for him to spy on them, and his super hearing could only pick up the faint sounds of a language that was completely alien to him. Something strange was going on here. Something very strange. After a quarter of a mile, the passage was blocked by a solid wedge of shaped stone, a plug of sorts. A carved stone ring protruding from its end suggested it had been designed to prevent any further intrusion. Unless there was some sort of machinery to move it, it would require superhuman strength, even to budge it. Superman gripped the stone ring in both hands. The gigantic mass of rock must have weighed 50 or 60 tons, but it began to slide toward him, turning on cunningly concealed stone pivots until it revealed enough space for a large being to pass. Superman slid through. He knew instantly that he'd entered a prison. The regular layout, the obvious cells running off to each side, the very atmosphere of the place all screamed its function. Superman decided it was time to use the telepathic link that connected him to John Jones. When the Martian was conscious and available to enable the link, it was often how all of the Justice League members managed to stay in contact with each other. Yet the invasion of mental privacy it brought was so shocking, could be so traumatic, that even superheroes used telepathy carefully and sparingly. He hadn't dared before now, in case it gave away his presence. There were many telepathic races in the universe, and Superman had no way of knowing if the Verks were possessed of that particular ability. He knew from John that it could be a frightening thing to read another human's mind, and was quietly grateful that telepathy wasn't one of the powers that had been bestowed on him by Gaia and its yellow sun. He backed against a wall, giving him a view of all possible approaches, and reached out with his mind. The Martian Manhunter and Lobo were one cell apart. John could see the bounty hunter fairly clearly through the translucent walls, as Lobo occasionally amused himself by sticking his tongue out or making faces at his fellow captive. Then he'd pace his cell, muttering curses over and over, evidently working himself up into a frenzy. Approximately every hour or so, Lobo would attack the walls in a fury, pounding and hammering and kicking. Each time, he resisted the surging electricity until he ended up a slavering, quivering wreck on the cell floor. But John noticed that each time, it took longer before the bounty hunter collapsed. John himself had tried one more time to bludgeon his way through the cell wall, but the blaze that met him was fiercer, even hotter than before, and he soon gave up. Unlike Lobo, the Manhunter didn't seem to gain any immunity with his mounting anger.
John? John Jones?
The voice spoke quietly inside his head, and John felt his spirit suddenly soar.
I'm here, Superman. Imprisoned.
What's happened?
As swiftly as he could, the Martian ran through everything that had occurred since Lobo brought him to Verk. He told of the false warrant. He had never committed any crime. It was only a ruse on the part of the Alpha to get him here.
A mighty rock being?
Yes. You have seen him?
He was heading off-world, toward the other planet in the system, I think. But why does this Alpha want you?
I cannot tell. We appear to have been subjected to some kind of detailed analysis, but for reasons I do not know. The only other clue might be that the Alpha seems inordinately interested in beings who are the last of their kind.
Does that mean Lobo, too?
He's in a cell nearby. The Alpha played him for a fool. There was no million-credit reward waiting for him. Only a cell, the same as me.
Before we try to make sense of this, I'm going to get you out of there. Keep broadcasting to me, and I'll home in on your thoughts.
We can free Lobo, too.
I'm not so sure about that. He deserves to be left behind. He got you into this mess. He can get himself out of it.
That's not entirely fair. Lobo may be a brutal monster, but he was only doing his job in bringing me here. Besides, I saw a different aspect to him on our journey. Even Lobo might be redeemed.
Are you joking? Do you know what he's done? What he's capable of?
I know. And yet, I watched him defend a woman's honor.
Knowing Lobo, there would only be one reason for that.
Perhaps. Yet, it showed that even one such as he might have a heart.
Yeah, he keeps it in his gun.
The Manhunter could feel the Man of Steel growing inexorably closer.
Just one more corner and you will be here. You exit into a wider chamber.
The one with two statues against the wall?
You are in the right place. I saw the flash of color from your costume reflected in the quartz. But beware, my friend. There were no statues when we passed earlier.
The Manhunter's warning came just in time. Even as his words flashed in Superman's mind, the statues moved simultaneously toward him. Each was about 6 feet high, smaller versions of the Alpha itself, but much more crudely carved. Instead of hands, the craggy arms ended in a shapeless mass, like hammers. They moved with blinding speed, a stone tag team fighting in tandem. Superman managed to dodge the first swinging blow, but the second followed only an instant later. It careened off his shoulder with the force of a small tank. The telepathic link with John was broken as Superman tried to marshal his thoughts to the matter at hand. Swung around by the momentum of the blow, Superman was off balance as the stone men continued their assault. Massive fists smashed into him from all angles, giving him no time in which to react. Despite his invulnerability, he felt the potency of their impacts and knew that even he couldn't withstand them forever. As the living statues drove at him again, he stepped back from them, grasping each by a thick stone wrist. He whipped hard with both hands, sending the stone men somersaulting on their backs. They scrambled clumsily to their feet, unfazed by the fall.
Makes sense. Stone men aren't going to feel much pain, but they can't fight me if they can't reach me.
Intense red beams lanced from the Kryptonian's eyes, focusing like lasers on the creature's thick-set ankles. There was a pungent odor of burning rock as the surface of their calves and ankles began to bubble, melting and flowing in little rivulets to pool on the ground. One of the creatures fell over, its lower legs burned entirely through. The second one was tougher and tried to lunge at Superman. Intent on depriving it of motion, the Man of Steel kept up his barrage of heat vision and braced himself against the hammer fist that screamed toward his shoulder. It was a big mistake. As the stone fist slammed forcefully into him, he felt it shatter against his arm. Shards of rock flew off in all directions, and sudden pain shrieked through him. Dumbfounded, Superman lurched back and glanced down at his arm. Pain was almost unknown to him. His invulnerable body was proof against anything. Or almost anything. A thin, iridescent layer of green kryptonite clung to his arm. Ironically, apart from magic, the debris from his ruined planet was the only thing that could harm the Man of Steel. Chunks of rock hurled out by the catastrophic explosion had passed through an intense cosmic storm, which bathed them in a strange plasma radiation, ionizing the stones and turning them toxic to anything born on Krypton.
But how could the Alpha know that?
But before Superman could come up with any kind of answer, he felt his power drain out of him. Even as the second stone monster's leg snapped and it tumbled face forward to the ground, Superman himself was falling. His hand brushed feebly at the grainy green kryptonite. Flecks fell off, but not enough. Green fire seemed to course through his veins, blurring his vision, until the whole world turned green, and the flames burned too brightly. Superman closed his eyes and gave up the struggle.
Superman? Are you still there?
There was no reply. John could only conclude that the Man of Steel, Earth's mightiest hero, had been defeated. His heart sank as he suddenly realized kryptonite. The Alpha had known of Lobo's susceptibility to electricity. It knew of John's own weakness, naked flame. It made sense that it had somehow discovered Superman's Achilles heel too. John's thoughts raced as the bigger picture started to reveal itself. He wouldn't be surprised if the Alpha had calculated that Superman would come to rescue his friend, another last son for his mysterious collection. Through the walls, John could see Lobo baring his teeth and rolling his eyes. The bounty hunter was working himself up into another frenzy. He didn't even glance at John as he threw himself at the cell wall. There was a jagged kaleidoscope of electrical energy. The charge intensified, the voltage increasing, as streaks of pure white lightning arced into the bounty hunter. It took 30 seconds this time, but the end result was still the same. John settled back against the wall, a dark cloud of gloom hanging over him. The Alpha had played all of them for fools, and now they were his captives. Bugs in a lab, animals in a zoo, living specimens in a crystal museum.
But why?
Bastard! You're cheating!
Randon the Coon erupted out of his seat and grabbed his brother's arm. Twisting Vert's wrist, he forced him to show the cards that he held. Vert wrenched his arm away, thrusting the table back as he stood upright. Then the Coons were at each other's throats, fangs bared.
You sticky, bus-sucking carapace! Shove it up your manishes, you loser!
All right, ladies. That's enough.
They let each other go at once. Randon stooped on one knee and began gathering up the cash he'd lost to his cheating brother.
You can find somebody else to play with from now on.
He glanced at the Arcturan, who had entered with angel eyes.
Try him. I'd like to see you cheat then. Forget it.
Vert would rather play tag with a bunch of Syrian scorpions than cards with a black magician. The bounty hunter's needle ship had retreated to the very edge of the B-2323 system.
It's too far for our onboard telescopes to show us what's happening in Orion, but Cabale knows another way.
The Arcturan squatted down and used chalk to draw occult sigils on the floor surrounding him. Then he fell silent and retreated into himself. Cabale relaxed, and allowed conscious thought to seep from his mind. All magic depended on the will of the practitioner. Everything else, emotions, desires, even intellectual capability, was a sideshow. There could be no distractions. Arcturans called this particular skill Agahema, and in reality, it was not magic at all. It was more like astral projection or an out-of-body experience. Almost anybody could learn to do it, if only they practiced long and hard enough. Kabael willed his mind to expand, to push out beyond the confines of his flesh and bone, and into the infinity that lay beyond. Suddenly, in his mind's eye, Orion was clear before him, as clear as if he were actually there. A gigantic stone figure, which could only be the Alpha, was being greeted by a host of small alien creatures, like the one Angel Eyes had interrogated. They clustered around the stone humanoid, like goblins around an ogre, chattering in their alien tongue as they led the way to a downsloping entrance. They disappeared underground. The Arcturan followed, an invisible wraith, his presence completely undetectable. Now the Alpha stood before a fantastic piece of engineering. Completely carved from stone, it was an intricate spider's web of tubes and fine rock wires. The Alpha stepped up to it and gripped two protruding handles made of quartz. Nothing happened at first, but slowly, a pale lilac glow began to spread across each handle. It deepened dramatically and quickly until it was purple. There was a sudden flash, and the glow was gone.
Strange. It seems to be transferring some kind of emotional energy from its body.
The Alpha nodded, evidently satisfied, and stared hard at its tiny minions. The Arcturan knew it could only be broadcasting telepathic orders. This was interesting. He would be able to read its mind directly, unless the Alpha had mental defenses in place. Kabael focused hard, the sinister strands of his mind reaching out toward his target. There was a feeling entirely unlike anything Kabael had encountered before. The Arcturan snapped out of his trance with a visible start.
What's up? Trouble?
Indubitably trouble. But whether it is for us, I do not know. The being called the Alpha is on Orion. As far as I could tell, it is discharging some kind of energy into storage batteries. I tried to read its mind.
End?
Angel Eyes and the Kund brothers were staring agog at their crewmate.
And I could not. The Alpha is not alive. It is not an organic creature. It is a machine mind. An artificial intelligence.
On Orion, the Vurcans consulted with their master before he again took to the skies. Although they did not understand what they were building for him, they were pleased because the Alpha was pleased. Had they but known it, they'd constructed a series of storage containers, mathematically configured to hold the emotional energy that the Alpha had siphoned off from Lobo and the Martian Manhunter. Now it had delivered that charge. Once the batteries were transferred to the Vurcan spaceships, it would be usable as a weapon of mass destruction. Elsewhere, under the still-burning cities, the Vurcans were busy constructing other weaponry of all kinds, to the Alpha's specifications. Slender spacecraft, miracles in stone, were taking shape. They would carry the armaments to their designated targets. In yet other locations, their army of stone soldiers was growing swiftly. As yet, the warriors were mere statues, replicas of the twin sentinels the Alpha had left to guard his prisoners. When the time came, the Alpha would charge them with the energy to perform their destructive tasks. The Alpha had already weighed up and selected its next target. The star Arcsides was a mere day's journey distant. There were three worlds in its solar system, all populated, all fairly isolationist in their tendencies. None was technologically advanced, so resistance would be minimal. The clock was ticking out the countdown to war. Scientists suspect that every living cell carries the memories of all life that ever existed, and every mutation that it ever made. The 90-plus percent of DNA that they call junk isn't junk at all. It's the blueprints life needed in the past. and may need again when current conditions change. Deep in the cells of his body, Superman carried the racial history of Krypton. His first memory, being held in his father's strong arms, keen eyes staring at him, with tears prickling at their corners, a fierce hug, the faint smell of his mother's perfume, the merest hint of an unknown flower. She's hugging him to her, as if she'll never let him go. He's laid in a crib that holds him fast. A panel slots into place, sealing him in. Vibrations shake the pod. He sees his parents' tearful faces against the window. Everything changes. There's a terrible noise, and the crib is forced upward at incredible speed. The sad faces have been replaced by darkness and twinkling stars. He's just a baby. He doesn't understand that Krypton is on the verge of death, or that his scientist father has sent him into space to escape it, or that he will be the only survivor. He never witnessed the destruction of his home world. He was a child in a spacecraft, blasting away from the disaster. But now Superman saw it, in his imagination. The giant planet literally rippled when vibrations from its unstable core reverberated through it. In an instant, bedrock turned to quicksand as the anarchic oscillations grew and spread. Cities sank into one solid granite, their citizens submerged in liquefied stone. The planet's largest conurbation stood on a long-dormant fault line. When it cracked and spewed out a sea of red-hot lava, the city stood no chance. 10,000 years of culture, art, and science disappeared as if they had never been. Somewhere down there, the baby's parents held each other as the glassine atrium dome that covered their labs burst into a million deadly shards. The effects intensified. Huge slabs of land pivoted on end and slid into suddenly yawning abysses. Vast herds of animals stampeded in panic when their forests burst into flame around them. The oceans seethed and bubbled and boiled, hot volcanic gases pouring into them from 10,000 undersea fissures. In the space of a few hours, the planet turned itself inside out. Then, it exploded. When you watch it in the movies, an explosion becomes a thing of slow-motion beauty, a balletic dance set to rousing music. As countless fragments trace out their graceful trajectories, smoke whorls spiraling in their wake. Destruction, viewed as a work of creativity. But when you look beneath the superficial beauty, you see only the victims' terrified faces. You hear only their heart-rending screams and pleas for aid. You see destruction for what it really is, the cold, bleak end of life. Nobody, nothing in the universe could have helped the people of Krypton. Especially not a baby, hurtling away in a spaceship. That didn't prevent the tears that sprang from Superman's closed, unseeing eyes, coursing down his face and dripping onto the cold quartz floor of his cell.
Emotion affects all life. Emotion weakens life. Not always. This one is purged of grief. He has become a hero.
It was a long, long journey from Krypton to Earth. The baby was fed and cleaned, automatically, regularly, thoroughly. His father had thought of everything.
Kal-El bat Samian Koi. Samian Kal-El.
Kasam Sil Abad Mardin Kal-El.
Gentle voices, recordings of his mother and father, spoke soothing words when loneliness became too great, and he cried in his life pod. Their holographic images were there to comfort him, as he drifted off to sleep, and his father had ensured that his son would learn. A vast number of crystal keys had been inserted into the craft's quantum computer. Each key held all the knowledge that had been gleaned from a different discipline during Krypton's long history. The child had no way of knowing what they meant, but the data and its subliminal messages was absorbed directly into his unconscious mind. Smallville, a township in the Midwest. Impossible skies that went on forever. Every day, a different shade of blue. Fields of tall yellow corn swaying in unison as a teenage boy raced through them at 200 miles an hour. Jonathan and Martha Kent the farmers who adopted him, who hid their foundling super baby, so no scientist could ever take him to pieces to see how he worked. Their decency and honesty and compassion taught him that great power meant nothing unless it was used to create, not destroy. He learned to aid, not dominate. Lessons he would never forget. His adoptive father's philosophy echoed that of Aristotle 2,000 years before him. Man is naturally good. Leave him alone to get on with his life and the world will prosper. But human nature being what it is, there has to be a fly in the ointment. In a word, deceit.
Accept people for what they are, but keep a weather eye open for what they aren't.
Metropolis, one of America's greatest cities. He was a reporter now, Clark Kent, bespectacled and mild-mannered, biting in hidden places to rip off his suit and shirt and tie, exposing the red and blue costume beneath. Protecting the city, rescuing Lois Lane, living a life. Superman, Earth's mightiest hero. Super strong, invulnerable, able to fly. Heat vision, X-ray vision, telescopic vision. Super speed, scourge of the planet's criminal fraternity. Member of the Justice League of America. Defender of Earth against catastrophe, be it earthquake or alien invasion. And underneath, beat the heart of a decent man.
Another tale of tragedy. Soon, all tales will be tragedies. Then, there will be no more tales.
The Alpha had returned from Orion to find Superman unconscious, collapsed on the prison floor next to its two immobilized guardians. The superhero's skin was turning pale green from prolonged exposure to the toxic kryptonite. The stone giant scooped him up casually and tossed him into the cell between his other captives. As John Jones suspected, the Alpha had indeed been nearly certain that Superman would follow his friend. So it had taken precautions, and they had paid off. Twin beams of energy blazed from the Alpha's eyes, sweeping over Superman's shoulder and arm, disintegrating the flecks of kryptonite. There was always more, should it be needed. The Man of Steel stirred. His eyes flicked open. And he began to massage his aching shoulder. The pain was rapidly subsiding as the effects of the toxin wore off.
Why? Why are you doing this?
We are the Alpha. We are the first. You are the last. Is that explanation enough?
I don't understand.
That does not matter. The walls contain detectors. Should you attempt to escape, you will receive a large, possibly fatal dose of kryptonite.
That's another thing.
Superman staggered to his feet, holding on to the cell wall for support.
How did you know I'm vulnerable to that one substance?
Your computers told us.
Computers? You mean...
Superman remembered how the Justice League network at the Watchtower had been acting up for no apparent reason.
You hacked into the Watchtower.
When we first came to Verk, we used their transmitter to broadcast a message. Eventually, that connected us to the computers at your base. We learned all that we needed to know.
Superman frowned. The Watchtower security had been breached, and none of the other members knew. It could only have been a few days since he left the moon, but it seemed to him as if months had passed. The Alpha turned its back and exited from the cell. The transparent oval hatch slid shut, sealing Superman in. He slumped to the floor, head in one hand. He'd been in tight spots before. His great powers had brought him up against similarly gifted villains time and again. Always, always there had been a way out. He hoped that this wasn't the exception that proved the rule. When John Jones saw the Alpha dump Superman in the cell next door, he started involuntarily to his feet, but with difficulty, he restrained himself. There was nothing he could do. He was relieved when Superman came around. And when the Man of Steel started to quiz his captor, John thought he saw a chance. It was one of his own rules, rigidly imposed ever since he'd come to Earth, never to enter the mind of anybody unless they were a willing recipient. Emergencies and villains, obviously, were an exception. and the Alpha was beginning to shape up as some kind of villain supreme. The Stone Giant's guard would be down as it conversed with Superman. John might not get this opportunity again. The Martian relaxed and let his mind go blank, reaching out to the Alpha's mind. Nothing. John glared at the floor. Was this a complication? Did it matter? Or was it somehow the key to their escape? The Alpha was an artificial intelligence.
A Martian, a Zonian, a Kryptonian, an Aurean. We will retain a single specimen from every species. Their DNA will be analyzed, replicated, and stored in our vaults. Their emotional energies will be used as weaponry. The universe will be ours.
The Alpha hovered 100 feet in the air. Application of the reflecting powers of its crystal body, coupled with its deep understanding of the science of light, allowed it to project itself at 3 times its normal size. Below, in the planetoid's largest subterranean cavern, 100,000 Vrkans thronged the floor, packed in so tightly that hundreds were forced to cling high on the support pillars.
The majority of you will accompany us to Aurion in the ships you have been constructing beneath the surface. Our war fleet will assemble there. The rest will remain here. You will bring the plans we have given you to fruition. You will ensure that the captives do not escape.
The Vrkans sprang into motion. They separated, running into different corridors, others following the leaders like a flock of sheep. When the last one had gone, the Alpha shut down its projectors. It flew out through the mouth of the cavern and blazed into the sky above, the way a god should. It turned and waited. Minutes later, the first sleek black crystal ship slid out of a custom-dug surface crater. They were followed by more, and more still, until the skies above Vrk teemed with hundreds of the stone-made spacecraft. Their crystal hulls absorbing sunlight, converting it directly into power, they soared high toward their creator. With the Alpha at its head, the deadly armada headed away from the sun. Lobo recovered consciousness with the ugly feeling of fingers crawling under his scalp.
Baldy, get out of my fraggin' mind.
My apologies.
No need for telepathy. The Alpha is gone.
How could you know that?
The main man tapped his nose and grinned weakly.
My sense of smell can track a single molecule halfway across the galaxy. And the big guy's stone butt is currently heading off-world at a pretty high speed. Ugh.
He struggled into a sitting position.
Are you all right?
Who can say about these things, dude?
Lobo lit up a cheroot and amused himself by blowing smoke rings. Nope, he realized, this wasn't some booze-induced nightmare. He was indeed captive in a translucent cell that turned up the voltage every time he tried to bust free. And he had a couple of do-gooders as fellow convicts. He screwed up his eyes, forcing jangled nerve endings into focus. He could see Superman in the cell next to him. Beyond, in the third cell, was the Martian. Being locked up was bad enough, but being locked up with superheroes was even worse.
What do you want anyway, Baldy?
Superman and I have been talking. We have decided it would be best if we made a concerted effort to escape.
Hey, be my guest, man. Concert away.
We were hoping that you might have some ideas.
Well, flattery will get you everywhere, Jonesy.
The bounty hunter blew a final smoke ring and stubbed out the butt on the floor.
Yeah, I got some ideas. Like, for starters, these cells are set up to drain off our emotional energy.
How do you know this?
Because if they weren't, I'd have been furious enough hours ago to smash my way out of this stinking joint. I'm telling you, I just ain't running on full main man fraggin' vengeance mode.
His head tilted to one side as he considered briefly.
Though maybe it's down to lack of nervous system stimulants. Like, I could murder a couple of cans of booze.
I saw some strange alien machinery, all made out of stone. I couldn't make head nor tail of it. Why would the Alpha want our energy anyway, Lobo?
Oh, sheesh, what am I? Oily the Oracle?
Could it somehow be connected with what happened on Aurion? If the Alpha did that, and I am more and more inclined to think it did, It may be planning other attacks on other worlds.
John, I know it's against your personal code of ethics, but couldn't your telepathy...
Personal code of ethics? Man, he was in my noodle faster than flies to a corpse. Ethics makes me want to vomit.
I admit that I have already tried, but I failed. The Alpha is not a normal sentient being. It is an artificial intelligence.
It said several times that it was the first, and we are the last. Do you think that means the Alpha is planning...
That's it, Big Cheese! The Alpha's gonna make the universe extinct. Kill off everything. Make sure of its own survival by offing the competition. You gotta respect a guy that can pull off a stunt like that.
Respect?
This is not an appropriate time for dispute, Superman. We should be furthering our scheme to escape.
You ain't got a scheme, Baldy.
And you have? Electrocute yourself until the Alpha takes pity on you, perhaps, and sets you free?
Huh. Yeah, I gotta admit, my brain will be blenderized before I get out of here. Not that the sensation is entirely without its attractions. Of course, there's always my bike.
Your bike?
Sure. The Spazfrag 5000 is fitted with a whistle control. Trouble is, every time I tried to whistle for it, the cell electrocutes me.
He raised his fingers to his lips, as if toying with the idea of giving a demonstration, then let them fall again.
You know, I hate myself for what I'm gonna say. Maybe Big Blue can duplicate my whistle. His cell won't be programmed to electrify him. The bike answers, it blasts us free, and Bunk's your unk.
I beg your pardon?
Bunkle is your uncle. It means we're home free, with emphasis on free. The bike carries enough weaponry to take out a small army.
I'm willing to give it a go. What are the notes?
If I demonstrate, I get fried.
If you don't, we all stay here.
Oh, what the hell?
Lobo stuck two fingers in his lips. Lightning shot through the air, sending exquisite pain shooting through his entire mouth and down into his innards.
I wouldn't want to do it for a living, though.
The Man of Steel might have had super breath, but he wasn't exactly famed for whistling. He was looking askance at his two forefingers, as if unsure where to put them.
Did you get the notes?
I think so.
Dubiously, Superman put his fingers in his mouth. Instantly, the cell wall writhed with crackles of green kryptonite. Instinctively, Superman fell back, both hands raised to protect his face.
Sorry, John. And I'll bet you get the same reaction, only with flame if you try. The Alpha seems to have covered every angle. It doesn't look like we'll be getting out of here yet.
The Martian stroked his chin.
It occurs to me that we have one final option. On our way in here, I prevented Lobo from gratuitously killing some of the inhabitants. Perhaps, if they are still around, they might be willing to help us.
That's a bit of a long shot, John. Then again, desperate times call for desperate measures. See what you can do, old friend.
John squatted on the cell floor and reached out with his mind, racing at the speed of thought through the tunnels and hallways and caverns cut in the bedrock below. A large party of Vurcans was deep inside the planetoid, excavating a gargantuan chamber that had hundreds of thick stone pipes running into escape vaults at its far end. They had no idea they were constructing a giant engine, one that would turn Vurk into an impenetrable crystalline fortress that would serve as the Alpha's mobile base as its sphere of influence grew. They knew only that the Alpha had told them what to do, and that to disobey would incur its godly wrath. They divided into parties that carried out their tasks like automatons. They had been the pathetic remnants of a once great civilization when the Alpha found them. Now they were debased slaves, who existed only for their master's whim. Suddenly, one of them turned from the pipework it was laboriously carving. It dropped the sharp stone tool it held. The agile fingers of both hands clutched its head, shaking it as if trying to drive out demons. This wasn't the vague, directed thoughts the Alpha had suffused them with. This was stone needles scraping under its skull. The little alien scuttled into a recess in the hewn stone wall. It calmed a little, rocking back and forth on its gnarled feet. Something was happening inside its head. It was always difficult to communicate mentally with alien beings. Their image systems, their cultural symbols, their entrenched beliefs, all were formidable barriers to psionic harmony. From what John Jones could pluck from the creature's atrophied mind, he was able to piece together a few fragments of the Vurcan's history. But that wasn't important. What mattered was that he let it know who he was and remind it how he had saved it. Difficult, when the creature had little concept of death in the first place. Similarly, it had no idea what Orion was, and why it would matter if the Alpha had wiped out a billion or more people. John tried again, and again.
Ooh. Man, what a rush. Soon as we get back to civilization, I'm gonna invent a personal mouth jolter. Take it from me, Baldy. Your lips really tingle, like kissing ice. Only downside is, you keep losing consciousness.
The Vurcan had a clear picture in its head. It ignored the others and made its way between the different work parties. It stopped beside one individual, its slender fingers wrapping around the other's arm and drawing it away. They chattered for a few minutes, then moved away toward the exit. En route, they picked up number 3. They set out up the tunnel, a trio of misshapen golems, scuttling as quietly as they could, necks continually twisting as they looked fearfully around to see if their god was watching.
Man!
Xemtex was beginning to feel bored. The Spazfrag still sat, alone and unheeded, in the throne room. Xemtex had witnessed the Alpha's departure, then spent several hours trying to spark the bike's ignition by willpower alone, without a scintilla of success.
If I ever get out of this, I'm gonna pummel Lobo within an inch of his life. And that's just for starters. That bastard is so dead!
Was this why he'd bucked against the traces all his life? Why he'd battled authority at every opportunity? Is this how his criminal career was to end? As a brain in a bounty hunter's bike? Hell, another few years and he'd have been a top dog, reward money in the 100K bracket, and looking forward to an early retirement. Xemtex retreated into a grim and bloody reverie, imagining having his hated foe at his mercy, with an unlimited number of sharp instruments. He had no idea how much time had passed, when he was suddenly jerked out of his violent daydreams. He couldn't be sure, but it was beginning to seem as if he was settling into his new role. The boundary between his own thoughts and the demands of running the bike was blurring over. His brain was becoming desensitized. He had to find a way out of this as fast as he could, before his thoughts disappeared entirely. The bike's external sensors were picking up three small shapes in the cavern shadows, moving stealthily toward it. Unable to move or react in any way, Xemtex could only wait as the trio of Vurcans surreptitiously approached. They were obviously anxious not to be discovered, glancing continually around them, suddenly stopping stock still, with their pricked-up ears quivering. At last, the Vurcans reached the bike. One immediately swung itself up into the driver's seat. Xemtex felt himself smirking as he waited for the saddle spike to shoot up and impale the trespasser. Nothing happened. The little creature must have been warned in advance, because it was taking great care not to spring the booby trap. It reached out a hand toward the override, and a long finger nicked it off. The other two Vurcans leapt aboard, clinging to the handlebars as the bike rose slowly into the air.
Hey! Hey! I'll be installing here!
The bike turned lazy circles in the air as the Vurcans manipulated the controls. Then the Spazfrag shot forward at full speed, almost hurling its tiny passengers off as they barely managed to guide it into a tunnel. They bowled along in a series of fits and starts, every now and again scraping the bike against the tunnel walls as they tried to take a corner too fast. 5 minutes later, the bike was entering the prison sector, and Xemtex felt himself cheering up immensely. Through the transparent wall directly ahead, Xemtex could see Lobo. The bike slowed to a halt outside Lobo's cell.
How the mighty are humbled. I have to say, it couldn't have happened to a bigger bastard.
Yeah, nice to see you too.
You'll be happy to know you're gonna break me out of here.
Ha! In your dreams, sucker! You know what I'm gonna do? I'm recording your prison ordeal on the sensors. I'll broadcast the pictures all over the galaxy. You'll be a total laughingstock!
Shaking his head slightly, Lobo turned to face the Martian 2 cells away from him.
Hey, Baldy, tell one of your little tykes to hit the voltage switch.
The Martian merely looked at the Vurcans. The Vurcans almost jumped off in fright.
I trust that settles the little matter of your rebellion. Now, I want you to retreat to about 30 feet away and blast this wall with all the firepower you got. Do you think you can do that?
The bike moved backward in sullen silence, the Vurcan still hanging on.
All right! Let's have a damage check.
There was a long, hairline crack in the cell's oval doorway.
Holy geez! Tough or what? Still, at least you got it started. Better give it another go, Zemtex.
I'm using up a lot of ammunition. It would probably be better if you stay here while I go find some help.
It would probably be better if you do as you're told. There's plenty more ammo in the reserves.
Zemtex hesitated.
Do it, or I'll have the tykes hit the juice so hard you'll think it was born fried.
Zemtex screwed up his eyes in anger, metaphorically speaking, of course, not having any eyes left except the bike sensors, and lo and behold, it was just like the old days. The fissure in the cell door had widened to become a hole.
All right!
And then Lobo was clambering through to freedom.
I can still do it! I can still pull things up just by looking at them and thinking about it!
A warm, smug feeling enveloped Zemtex's brain. He felt as pleased as he would be to wake up and find himself scratching his butt and belching. His first manic impulse was to start blasting Lobo. The thought of the bounty hunter's body disintegrating into chunks of bloody meat made him want to laugh out loud. Healing factor? He'd blow Lobo into so many pieces, he'd never be able to put himself together again. But Zemtex held himself in check. If he took out Lobo, he'd still be left here at the mercy of the Alpha. Besides, the 3 dwarfs were still on his back. One telepathic command from Baldy, and Zemtex was fried. Better to bide his time. Wait till they were far away from this accursed place. Then, when the main man least expected it, kaboom! Game over. Rest in peace, one arrogant, big-mouthed bastard. Oh yes. Zemtex could wait. And with a little luck, it wouldn't be for too long.
Yeah. You know, freedom is a double-edged sword.
Lobo stooped down and snatched up his blaster from where it had fallen during his fight with the Alpha. He weighed it in his hand and checked that the ammo clip was full, before turning back to face Superman and John Jones in their cells.
I mean, just look at my options. I can blast you 2 free, I can just hightail it on the bike with my brainy buddy Zemtex, or...
Lobo swung the gun around slowly until it was leveled at the trio of Vurcans still perched on the bike. Deafened and half blinded by the noise and glare of the explosions, they were almost in a state of shock.
I can catch up on the fun you denied me earlier and blast these cute little gonks to kingdom come.
No!
Only joking. Even the main man wouldn't stoop that low. Not unless I was getting paid for it. Or if I was in a really bad mood.
Without warning, he brought the gun back up at speed and whirled back to face the Martian cell.
I'll just pretend I'm shooting you, Baldy.
Slivers and shards of razor-sharp crystal peeled away as the incredibly hard stone began to shatter under the force of the beams. Finally, the oval door split right up the middle. It hung there suspended for a second before it collapsed under its own weight. The Martian Manhunter stepped out from his confinement.
There you go, Baldy.
Lobo tossed him the gun, and the Martian caught it deftly.
I can't bring myself to free Big Blue. Just can't do it. I'd rather leave him here.
John frowned at the gun in his hand, obviously unused to firearms. Suddenly, Lobo snatched the gun back again.
Oh, whoops! I forgot. The gun's booby-trapped. If it ain't my palm holding it when the trigger's pulled, somebody loses a hand. Guess I'll have to force myself.
Lobo almost kept on shooting as Superman shoved the shattered door aside and exited to join his Justice League colleague.
That's one you owe me, Big Cheese. But don't sweat it. I'll figure some way you can pay me back.
I think you're forgetting it's your fault we're here in the first place. It's you who owe...
Gentlemen, no recriminations, please. Our fight is not with each other. We have to stop the Alpha from completing its insane quest.
Aw, I kinda like insane quests. The little guy battling against all odds to make his dream a reality. Stories to tell around the campfire.
The Alpha is not a little guy. Its dream appears to be the destruction of all life. If we do not stop it, there will be no campfire and no stories to tell.
Huh. Point taken. But I still have to admire the Alpha. Heck, he makes me look like a piker.
The bounty hunter whirled abruptly and walked to his space bike.
Tell you what, since there ain't any cash involved, I'll let you two catch Alfie and collect all the glory. Can't say fairer than that, right?
Do you not have a personal grudge to settle with the Alpha? I was under the impression you always seek revenge on those who betray you.
I won't argue with that, Baldy. There's nothing I like more than slicing and dicing a traitor. But it's a question of economics, see? There ain't no million creds no more. And that kind of makes my interest wane somewhat.
You may be wrong there. If, as we suspect, the Alpha destroyed Orion, surely the Galactic Authorities will put a bounty on his head.
Hey, maybe you ain't as dumb as you look, Baldy. Illegal invasion of a world followed by illegal massacres, if Big Blue got it right. There's got to be a few war crimes in there, too. Oh, man, I can smell that million starting to build again. Yes, sir, that cash has got the Bo's name embossed on it.
Suddenly businesslike, he swung himself up onto the bike, almost kicking one of the Verkans off.
Right, little dudes. It ain't often the main man says thanks, but I'm saying it to you. You did a real swell job. Now, come on! I'm gonna give you a ride the way the Spaz Frag should be rode.
Lobo! And the devil!
Yeah!
The bounty hunter took the Verkans on a high-speed tour of the tunnels that they'd never forget, if they survived it. Superman and John were waiting by the carved entranceway when he finally rejoined them 5 minutes later.
Where are the Verkans?
You didn't relax. I dropped the tykes off at their workstation.
It's not like you to do somebody a good turn.
Hey, I did one for you, man.
Lobo jerked a thumb over his shoulder, back toward the depths of the cavern.
Besides, I wanted to take a look around. I got a little knowledge of machinery myself. I once worked as a mechanic. Only lasted a couple of hours, of course.
I am sure your employment history is fascinating, but can we stick to the business at hand?
I was right about the energy drains. There are storage chambers set way under the cells. Guess Alfie'll synthesize our emotional energy. Maybe use it in his campaign against the universe.
How?
Hey, if I knew that, I'd probably be doing it myself, Soups. I guess Alfie's getting rage from me, though Fetal alone knows what he'll get from you two. But here's the good part.
Lobo fished a cigar from inside his vest and lit up, irritatingly slowly.
Well? Keep your trunks on. Alfie's turning this whole planetoid into a huge spaceship. Looks like it'll be powered by sunlight. We're talking advanced technocrap here, guys. This guy ain't no dummy. He's building himself one hell of a battle base.
We will achieve nothing by staying here. We must figure out what the Alpha's next target will be and stop the carnage before it begins.
A preemptive strike on his warfleet? Sounds good to me.
My nose will track him wherever he's headed. What are you waiting for? Last one to Orion's a big loser.
That's it, you moron. Laugh until you're good and dead.
Xemtex was happier than he'd been since he first blew up Lobo in the Radiated City. Not only was he going to destroy the bounty hunter, it looked as if he might be able to pick up the cash, too. Life was full of little surprises. Xemtex felt like singing, but he didn't.